Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 72 for Slamfire Radio, August 29th. I'm one of your hosts, Owen Flewelling.
I'm another one of your hosts, Trevor Furlott.
And I'm the warning shot.
Close enough.
Host dyslexia.
Taking dyslexia to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Hey, dyslexics are teeple poo.
That's right. Wait, what?
You heard me.
I heard you. So how's it going, guys?
Good.
Oh, you know, working on my Versamax.
Of course you are.
Of course I am.
Yeah.
Matthew. I only have so much time. It's called multitasking.
Right.
Yes, because, you know, you're at the range so much that you don't have time to work on your guns.
Exactly. there's a big difference.
Difference in what?
Nathan Anderson sent me the pin retaining clip in the Versamax. There's only one pin that goes through the receiver to hold the action in place. And I had been complaining that the pin was walking out while shooting. Mm. And I checked mine. I thought it was okay. But this one is much – I don't know if this is his own product or if this is a replacement Remington product. But it's significantly different. Yeah, on the it's shaped different, and it's slightly the bottom part of the – it's a C-clamp, essentially, and they've changed the shape and changed the size. So hopefully this will be the cure.
Cool.
So, yeah, there's my shout-out to Nathan. What's that?
I was going to say, why don't you continue on and talk about the rest of the stuff you've done with guns? I don't think you've ever gone first, so
– Yeah, we do that for a reason, though, remember?
That is true, but I didn't do anything, so he might as well.
Oh, he might as well fill up the time then.
All right. Well, if you hear me cussing, it's because I dropped this pin on the floor. along with the pin, Jason or Nathan also sent me a new screw to put on the Osprey Ordnance extended bolt release button that he sent me. It was threaded a different screw diameter and pitch than what they do when they add theirs, when Casey did mine. Speaking of Casey at Tactical Ordnance, Chris Babes got his Versamax barrel cut down and rethreaded. Casey's figured out a way to do it to not mess up the gas system and still have them cycle reliably. And Chris Babes was running a 28-inch, and he was saying, doesn't bother me at all, I can swing it well, blah, blah, blah. And now he's like, oh, this is so much better. So it's cut down to about a 21 or a 22-inch, something like that. And so, of course, naturally, I'm going to have to send my Versamax out to Casey to get him to do my barrel. Won't be until this winter, mind you, but I'm really looking forward to it. I have a 26-inch, and it doesn't look bad, but, yeah, I get it down a little closer to the end of the feed tube or the magazine tube. That'll be cool. So, okay. You guys still there? Because you're awful quiet.
No, we're just listening to you go, man. You're doing great. Right.
Okay. Nose goes to Provincials. There's a level 3. Amazing match. They did a fantastic job. I shot poorly and had problems with my gun. My Seymour sight mount came loose.
When's the last time my sights came loose on my Glock? Oh, wait. Never. I just wanted to throw that out there because that's, I hate you and you suck. Yeah, so does your Seymour sight. I'm just kidding, Trevor. I feel for you. I really do.
It's the way it goes. When you play with equipment like that, it works great. There are benefits, but there are some... Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. It's formula. We've talked about this before. It's Formula One racing, and there's way more things that can go wrong. But when everything does work right, it's so much fun.
Exactly.
So, you know, I just give you a hard time because it's easy to do.
Because you're a jerk.
And I'm a jerk. Yes.
Yeah. And you know, like Pat said, a Formula One race car is a lot faster than your Jetta, but it's a lot harder to drive.
That's right.
So...
Except that open guns are easier to shoot than the other ones.
No, they're not, though, actually.
No, I don't know about that.
Nice try, though.
Okay.
No. I don't know if they're actually any easier to shoot, to be honest with you. I changed my recipe a little bit. I upped the powder charge and changed projectiles. I finally have some BDX projectiles since Mo finally got his order from BDX there out in Alberta. So we made up some new loads and got out to the range for a couple of days of shooting and testing with my open gun early on in the week on Monday and Tuesday. Went through, I loaded 300 rounds on Monday and shot them all on Tuesday. Awesome.
That's a lot of,
yeah. What else? Yeah, that's a good practice session, 300. It's actually a bit more than 300. What else? Wednesday night after recording Action Shooting Radio, I guest hosted with Sticks on the Armed Squirrels Project.
That's cool. I did that a few weeks ago, too.
You interviewed a couple of really neat guys. That's right. You did, didn't you?
Yeah.
You were talking about getting thrown in a lake or something.
Yes. Yeah, that did happen.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It did happen. Yeah.
Yes. And it was fun. Anyway, what did you guys talk about?
Well, we interviewed Brian and Jason from Valkyrie Defense Group. They are concealed carry class teachers and this combat handgun instructors in the Iowa area. I think it's Iowa. Ohio. And, they seem like they're really on top of their game, and they've got a good philosophy and approach to teaching. It's funny, though. It's funny and it's not funny. One of the reasons why they decided they should start teaching is because two instructors in their area shot students during class.
What?
Thought,
no, no. That's,
we can
you're
do better than that.
You're doing it wrong. You're not supposed to shoot the students.
You're doing it wrong. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
One story about how buddy wanted to prove something about you could shoot your revolver from inside your purse.
As every man should be able to do.
Yeah. So he did, and he shot a guy in the arm. Luckily, the guy's arm was draped over his wife, and if the arm had not been there, it may have been a fatal wound on the wife.
Holy crap.
And then there was, only one instructor shot a student. The other one was a guy just was messing with a loaded gun on the line, and he wasn't, and he shot somebody in the ankle or something like that. So they decided it was, and they, you know what's cool is they always team teach.
Right.
Where a lot of these instructors were taking on too many students and didn't have enough student to instructor ratio.
Yeah.
And you lose control of the group and stuff. So, check them out on Facebook, Valkyrie Defense Group, Brian and Jason, a couple of real nice guys. They hardly made fun of me at all for being Canadian, unlike Chaz.
Well, that's fun. I mean, if they can't make fun of you for being Canadian, what can they make fun of you for?
Well, like I said, at least unlike Chaz, they didn't say I look fat in an Ipswich shirt.
Right.
That's a story for another time.
I guess so.
What did you do, Matthew?
I got some practice in there, too. I did some shooting at the range. And actually, funny story, there was a murder on the way to the range this week.
That's a funny story.
Yeah, well,
was it a big murder or a small murder?
Well, I got two of them, and then the rest flew away.
So was it? It's kind of a triple murder.
It was,
you were licensed.
I was licensed, so yeah.
So it wasn't murder.
I hope everybody knows a murder is a flock of crows. So I was on the way to the range, and just driving through this field. Well, not through the field, driving down the road. And big flock of crows was sitting there, and so stopped and I was going to the range to just shoot 22, so all I had was my non-restricted, so I didn't have to worry about ATT crap and stopping and all that other stuff. But
I saw a murder on the way to the range.
Yeah, so then I grabbed the Marlin and got out and hunkered down in the ditch and nailed. Well, I got one of them on the road or on the ground, and the rest of them flew away. And so I'm just sitting there and I'm like, I wonder if they'll come back. And there's no way they're going to come back. Was whatever. A couple of them were circling, so I just sat there and waited. And one of them landed right next to the one I had just shot. No problem, buddy. You're down really? Two. So yeah, got two of them. It was pretty good.
One of them landed right next to the one you shot?
Right next to the one I shot.
They do that though, right? They will like mourn their dead and stuff.
Well,
crows are...
He should have mourned later.
He should have mourned from a distance.
He really should have.
Awful.
Anyway, yeah, I got a couple of crows out hunting.
He shot his wife, for all you know. Like, yeah. He was coming back to check if she was all right.
Could have. Yeah. These things happen. You know, what are you going to do?
well, you know, you don't want to get killed, don't be a crow.
That's right, especially with me around. So anybody who keeps making fun of me, can't shoot nothing when I'm out hunting, shove it. I got two things. That's it for my year, though. I'm done.
Yeah.
I got my quota.
I'm starting to get the bug.
Who? You?
I'm
yeah.
I'm starting to get the bug, the itch.
It's starting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Walked out tonight, and it's just that nice, cool, you know, cooling down really quick. It's the temperature. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, leaves are starting to turn, and
even at like 7 o'clock at night, there's dew starting to fall. Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
It's time.
He's starting to hang around. Oh yeah,
absolutely. So I can't wait for that either. But I did actually go to the range with restricteds later on, and actually did some IPSC practice. I've never actually really practiced for IPSC before, but I'm.
Super.
Going to provincials next weekend with Trevor in Hampton, and thought, well, you know, Tommy showed us some pretty cool things at the Tommy course. We keep calling it the Tommy course. It's the para ordnance course.
Better and than I calling thought, it the intercourse.
Better than calling it a what?
Nothing.
Never mind.
I'll have to listen to that one on the playback later, figure out what you said. Anyway, so I went there and I did what, because you guys are always, you know, saying you got to have a plan and you got to do everything. And, you know, I tried to do it your way. Yeah, go
Let
ahead.
Let me know when you're done.
No, go ahead.
I bought a gun.
Yes, that sounds about right.
Because I'm looking at Facebook and Filthy's like, Trevor Frelate buys a new gun every month for us to duel over. I buy a new add-on every season to be made fun of, and I'm about to type. I did actually buy a gun this week, Filthy. So yeah, that's something else I did. But not only did I buy a gun, I basically bought this guy out. He gave me the Glock 17 Gen 3, 4 mags, ghost holster, ghost pouches, drop leg holster, a bunch of reloading components, more brass than I know what to do with. If you need 9mm brass, please call me. I will throw it at you. You don't have to pay for it if you let me throw it at you by the handful.
I'm in.
All right, cool.
Except that you need to pick it back up again because I don't really actually want it.
Oh, I will not. I will leave it there. Anyway,
I just want the nickel-plated stuff.
No, that's me. Yeah, I got a smoking deal on
so
all of it.
Did you mention what you bought?
What do you mean?
You didn't mention the type of gun that you bought, did you?
I did. I said a Glock 17.
Oh, you did. Oh, yeah. I wasn't listening to you. Sorry.
It is, in fact, a Gen 3.
It is a Gen 3. Okay, so yeah. Now you have a Gen 4 and a Gen 3.
Yeah, so I got to put my back strap on my Gen 4.
That way they both feel the same.
Yeah, so now I just need one more Glock.
That's it, a Gen 2.
No.
Then a Gen 1, and then you need a Gen 5.
No, I'm not.
Then you need one of them RTF ones, and all of them should be Glock 17s, of course.
Well, I want to have a Glock just locked up and stored, according to Canadian law, in the bug-out bag.
Right.
And then I never have to worry about grabbing the bag and going to unlock a gun. If
That's
I have
right.
to grab the bag and leave, there's a gun in the bag.
That's right, because you can do that. There's ways to store your gun in such a way that
lock
you can,
in a case.
Yeah, exactly. So. And lock ammo in there with the case, and you're all set.
Yeah.
Very
that,
cool.
I really think should be a 19. Calgary Shooting Center has Glock 19s on for $750.
Yep.
They were $1,000 just last year.
That's tempting.
That is tempting. We should all go to Glock 19s, guys.
Yes, we should.
Because that's the thing, eh? We can't, just one of us can't, because then we can't share mags. We've all got to have it so we can share mags.
We can
you know,
share mags?
What's
17 mags running the 19?
Yeah, but not the other way around.
That's right. So you don't buy, you do
So get, you get the Glock 19 and you can borrow our mags, but we can't borrow yours? Yeah, how's that fair?
The only mags, you never buy any 19 mags, because one, they'll be hard to find. Two, they'll be expensive. Three, they're not practical. So whatever comes with it, great. Throw them in the cabinet, forget about them, and just run 9. Just run 7. We can't conceal it anyway, so just run your 17 mags in it.
So you just look like a numpty the whole time instead.
Even
yeah,
if you,
a numpty
even
with, if, a seven, with a 19.
No, but even if you were running it concealed, even if you could run it concealed, you run it concealed with a 19 mag in the
and
guns.
Then you, and then you and carry then back your 17 mags.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm because sure. here in Canada, with 10-round mag capacities, that's yeah. a great idea.
No,
the thing,
know,
is,
I mean,
thing is, once that gun comes out, you don't not worried about concealment
there's
anymore.
No, yeah, exactly. There's no concealing at that point.
That's right.
That's a good point. Yeah, we should get Glock 19s. Anyway, back to what we've done. So when I did go to the range, I like I said before I got squirreled off there, I followed sort of Trevor's and Moe's and Pat's sort of advice for when you go to the range, go with a plan. And so I went with a plan. I opened with shooting for groups, just 10 meters, just sat there and shot a nice tight group. Started with that, and then I worked on draw, and then I worked on draw, shoot, and I made sure there was only one round in the mag. So shoot to slide lock, reload, close the slide, shoot again. That was it, and then I closed off with shooting for groups again. And it took me about 45 minutes, shot probably 150 rounds of ammo, and it went really well. I started off just about how I started off, you know, with Tom when he was coaching me one-on-one, pretty slow. But by the end of it, I was doing an average of about 1.15 seconds from the beep to the shot on my draw, which for me is pretty quick. Yeah, I mean, I'm not usually that fast, so I was happy with that. And then my when I would draw, shoot, reload, and shoot again, I was doing, my fastest time was 2:88, but regularly was right around 3 seconds for that sequence.
Do you want me to tell you something or share something with you that's disgusting?
Yes.
Pat Harrison can, doing the same drill, get in the low to high sevens.
Oh, that is disgusting.
You know, you're talking a second and a half.
Yeah.
I've been down to the high nines. Pat's down. Like, how do you do that? How do you get into the high sevens? Leaving low sevens sometimes.
Yeah.
I think what he said was with his ghost, with like a race holster and an open gun, he's low sevens, and with a Glock out of a duty holster, he's high sevens.
That is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, my best on that was, I couldn't break a second. My best was 1.07 was my best, and I could not beat that no matter what. I even a couple of times just drew and shot. And even still, I was like, I'm still so focused on trying to get that front sight, get that sight picture first. I just couldn't force myself to shoot faster than a second before I
get my sight. I'd rather hear that than...
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to...
I shot in half a second, but didn't hit nothing.
Yeah, right? I mean, who cares how fast you can shoot if you keep missing, right?
That's right, yeah.
So...
You let the other guy miss.
That's right, and then I shoot him. Or the target. Target shoot back? Wait, what? Oh, we're in Canada. Never mind. So I did that, and then I did have the 50 Beowulf with me. Because I am still putting that video together, a review on the 50 Beowulf, and I forgot to forget, and then Trevor reminded me I should chronograph the 50 Beowulf. So I brought the chronograph out and shot around through it, 1760 feet per second.
How is that compared to like advertised?
That's a good question, and I'll look that up and continue talking because I haven't looked that up yet, and I don't know how long it is going to take me to find it.
All right.
So I did that, and I also shot the 22 a little bit, which I'll get to in just a second. 1870 is about sort of the low end for factory stuff. So we're a little bit slower than factory.
Well, bump it up.
We certainly could. We could bump it up another 100 feet per second. But, I mean, still at 1760, I did the power factor, did the math as if it was an IPSC round, 525.
I wonder what that would be, like if you actually looked at the IPSC rules for power factor and rifle, I wonder what major is.
I don't know.
I'm going to look that up.
Okay, you look that up. I'll talk about my 22 shooting.
No, so, don't bother.
It's fun, though. I shot for groups with the rifle that Jewel's going to use at the Daniel Shaw course. She's going to come take the course with us, and she's shooting a Marlin 795 just because she doesn't want to shoot an AR. She wants to shoot her Marlin, so she's going to shoot her Marlin. Anyway, I just wanted to make sure it was all lined up. And what was that?
That's too bad. She could shoot the little AR that I've got and put the 22 conversion kit in it.
It's the noise. Can you imagine how much she'd like the noise of that thing? Oh, oh.
Yeah,
oh.
With a 22 conversion kit in it.
I've got two mags, Matthew.
That might work. We'll talk about that.
Or yep. We could, yeah.
Or we could just not tell her. This is your Marlin, dear. Don't you remember?
No, you know.
It's been so long since you shot it.
It's not ting.
Yeah, she'll know. But it might actually be, depending on how heavy it is, that actually might work better because it will be more centered because the Marlin is front heavy, of course, because it's got the 18-inch barrel on it. I don't know. That might be an option. We might have to try that out.
I think it would be a lot. Yeah, I think it would be a lot better if you're going to do a lot of standing and shooting.
Mm. Well, maybe next time we're down, we'll take her out to the range and try it and see how it works.
Yep,
that'd be cool. So I did that, but while I was there, I brought some of that. Remember how I have that 22 resizing die?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, I'm going to bring some of that stuff and just, you know, shoot for groups with my regular stuff and shoot some groups with the altered stuff, just because it's been a while since I've done it. And well, wouldn't you know. The altered stuff was twice the group size as the unaltered stuff this
twice
trip.
Twice the group size?
Twice.
Not half the size?
Not half. Twice.
Why?
I don't know. I only brought one magazine of it. I didn't only 10 rounds. I didn't bring, you know, my whole box of it. So I got to go back and figure out, wait, what happened? Did I just get all like shaky on two strings and screw up, or is something going on here?
You know what the power factor is?
What?
Minimum power factor for major in semi-automatic rifles?
Yeah.
320.
Oh, well, this is definitely major then. And you can score it from across the range.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got a great shot of I shot it for groups as well, just a 3-shot group and then a 5.56, and I got them both in the same target. It's amusing how much bigger they are compared to the 5.56. But anyway, it was actually a pretty busy week for me. I got out quite a few times, did some hunting, did some range shooting, did some practice. So I really enjoyed myself with guns this week. And on top of that, as Owen, I'll let Owen talk about it, but I taught a black badge with Owen last weekend as well. So, Owen, why don't you tell us how that went?
Yeah, because that's about all I did with guns this week. Friday night.
Who won between you two?
Oh, Matthew.
I thought you were just going to keep right on talking as if he didn't ask the question. That would have been funnier.
I'd be like, am I mic muted?
Nope.
Yeah, so we ran a black badge here in Woodstock and had 7 people participate in that. So that was pretty good group. Had kind of a variety. We had people that were somewhat new to guns, but I don't think there was anybody there that was really new. And some people that have been shooting a long time and had a lot of bad habits, but that's all right. We did the course Friday night and then shot the qualifiers in the morning and then the match in the afternoon. So we had 14 people for the match. Nice. We had a bunch of people come and help out with the course in the morning and then just stuck around to shoot the match. So we had a 4-line, 5-line officers, something like that. It was
almost 1-to-1 for some of them.
Almost 1-to-1, yeah. Yeah. So
the students that did need extra help did get a 1-to-1 for quite a bit of the day.
That's right. We were able to really focus on the people that needed help.
Yeah.
Dave got in another one.
He did,
yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. So we'll have to get his paperwork started.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, he's
sure.
It was funny. It was an interesting experience with him on Saturday. You know Dave. He's quite quiet and shy and reserved. New Brunswick Dave. Yes, not random Ontario Dave, because he's the opposite. Not really. I'm just kidding, Dave. So anyway, on Saturday, he had to get up super early, about 3:00 in the morning, I think, to drive a friend of his to the airport. And so by the end of the day, he was loopy, and he was hilarious. Every time I'd go over and talk to him, I'd walk away laughing because he'd just say something else. And it was just, it was great seeing him with that sort of...
Random Dave became Goofy Dave.
Yeah, it was quite funny. So it was good. So yeah, no, what else? That was it, I suppose, eh, Owen?
Yes.
You didn't do anything else with guns?
No, I don't
just
think I did.
Just a side note, Owen. I was talking to Matthew about RO points, and we figured out that your black badge match actually will qualify for a level 2, given the number of stages and rounds you had.
Oh, okay.
Just FYI, because I know that matters, right?
Sure. So that's all I did, unfortunately. I actually shot really well. If you want to talk about the match a little bit, I felt shot very well.
You did actually shoot well. You were quick, and you got most of your hits.
Yeah, I had. I dropped. I got a PT on one stage and a miss on another stage, and that's pretty much what cost me the match. But I was pretty much faster on every. I think I had the fastest time on almost every stage.
Don't feel bad, Owen. I got beat by a 50-year-old woman, and it's not to say that.
Are you calling me a 50-year-old woman? No, you're comparing me to a 50-year-old woman. That's what you're doing.
I'm just saying I had a very challenging day, and you know, but you know, I don't want to take anything away from her. She's a more accurate shooter than I am, and she beat me fair and square. But I had a gorgeous group at a PT target, just from about 8 yards away. You could cover it with a quarter. When the guys, that's not you, Trevor. That's your sights.
Yep. Cool. In case you've forgotten, Owen, your lead host, so maybe you want to carry on.
I'm just waiting to see if you're going to do the same thing you did at the black badge, and just basically every time I speak, you cut me off and finished.
He does it in person, too. See, it's not just a show thing.
Oh, man. I couldn't get a word in edgewise during the course.
Funny.
Sorry, Matt.
Yeah, I got to mute my mic because there's a train going by, so go nuts. Okay. Talk all you want.
All right, well, let's move on to some upcoming events. Multigun, September 13th, $20, and that's walk-ons, and that's the Restigouche Gun Club.
Nine stages. It's official. Okay. I will re-post the round counts when I get a minute. Filthy asked me about it today. He said, can I get the round counts for the three gun? To which I replied, yes. And then at one time, he said, am I talking to Owen or Trevor? Apparently, I was coming off Owen sarcastic, not Trevor sarcastic. So that was awesome.
I didn't realize there was that much of a difference, but I guess so.
Yeah. So, and sponsored by Press Check Ventures.
Right. And we also have the Thunderbird Tactical Carbine Clinic on October the 11th. And that's with Daniel Shaw.
Rick, you need to call me.
Okay. Rick, call Trevor. One spot available still, guys?
That is correct.
I never know whether to trust the show notes or not. $200. And yeah, if you pay before September 1st, you can cancel by September 1st for full refund.
That's right. That's one day away, maybe two. Yeah.
By the time you listen to this,
it's
refund.
It's too late. No refund for you. So
you come back 1 year.
Get in gear. Get out here. Shoot some carbines.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move on to some news. We have a couple news stories here. I'll read the first one if you want. Chicago crime rate drops as concealed carry applications surge. An 86-year-old Illinois man with a concealed carry permit fired his weapon at an armed robbery suspect fleeing police last month, stopping the man in his tracks and allowing the police to make an arrest. Law enforcement authorities described the man as a model citizen who helped others avoid being victims. Since Illinois started granting concealed carry permits this year, the number of robberies that have led to arrests in Chicago has declined 20% from last year, according to police department statistics. Reports of burglary and motor vehicle theft are down 20% and 26%, respectively. In the first quarter, the city's homicide rate was at a 56-year low. As of July 29th, the state had 83,183 applications for concealed carry and had issued 68,549 licenses. By the end of the year, Mr. Pearson estimates 100,000 Illinois citizens will be packing. When Illinois began processing requests in January, gun training and shooting classes, which are required for the application, were filling up before the Rifle Association was able to schedule them, Mr. Pearson said. Instead of creating more crimes, which many gun control advocates warn, increased concealed carry rates have coincided with lower rates of crime. A July study by the Crime Prevention Research Center found that 11.1 million Americans have permits to carry concealed weapons, 147% increase from 4.5 million 7 years ago. Meanwhile, homicide and other violent crime rates have dropped by 22%.
We covered a story at the beginning of the year where we talked about that 56-year low of the city's homicide rate, but then we all wisely decided that it might have something to do with the also record low temperatures they were experiencing. And so we weren't sure if these statistics were going to continue on the same trend.
I remember this.
And we promised that we would do follow-up and talk about whether or not the stats actually continued to fall or if it was just a result of the weather. Well, as you can see, we're all the way through summer now, well, just about, and it's back, you know, it's warm, it's hot, and the stats are still falling. Crimes are down, concealed carry permits are up. I'm not saying that concealed carry creates less crime, but I can tell you definitively, concealed carry does not cause more crime.
Oh, my, no. And I can say that model citizens are shooting bad guys.
And that's cool. Look, sometimes bad guys just need to be shot.
Well, you know, that's just nature, you know, didn't give them enough holes.
They needed a few more. Look, if you're going to start hurting other people, you're open season, man. There's open season on people who are hurting other people. You don't hurt other people if you don't want to get hurt. And that's where it stops, really. That's just logic and common sense.
I read a sign today on Facebook that said, hunters, please use caution while hunting pedestrians on walking trails.
Yeah, commas come in real handy.
Yeah, comma much, yeah. Somebody, the first reply was, I didn't know we had a season for pedestrians.
That would be great.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Okay, Matt, do you want to read this next one?
Yeah, it's only a line long, and that's because I don't have a subscription to the newspaper from which this story came, but I did read enough of the synopsis to kind of get a feel for what happened. And if anybody has additional information on this, we'd love to hear about it. Community service for hunting gophers without a license. So score one for the gophers. A man who went hunting for rodents with a rifle that he didn't have a license for will have to do 25 hours community service work. And that's as far as the story goes. But the excerpt that I read from somebody who had posted a bit more of it indicated that he was out hunting without a license, but he also didn't have a license for his rifle. But it doesn't sound like he is being charged or getting a firearms prohibition or getting any sort of criminal record for this.
Well, if he was with a buddy who had a PAL, he doesn't need a PAL.
That's
now,
right.
A hunting license is a different story. Now, the media is going to throw in there, he didn't have a license for the gun. They would automatically assume that anybody in possession of a gun anytime, anywhere does.
Right.
But as long as you're under the supervision of the license holder, you're good to go. But
that's
they'll
true.
Throw that in anyway.
Yeah. So that's right, and that very well could be the case, but it will be interesting to see if maybe a bit of common sense leaked through somewhere somehow, and it turns out that this guy wasn't a threat to public safety. And so, yes, you don't have your license, you know, maybe he didn't have a buddy with him, whatever, let's just, you know, slap on the wrist, don't do that, you're an idiot, carry on.
Hunting without a license, the issue of public safety never comes into it because it's a DNR.
Of course.
It's a provincial Wildlife Act violation.
That's right.
They discharge you for poaching. They don't care about public safety.
That's right. But the article does say he didn't have a license for the rifle.
Yes. Well, like I said.
Right. Depending on how the, you know, if the media got it right or not. But anyway.
Which, you know, he wouldn't. Yeah. If he was by himself, well, then, yeah, he's going to get charged with unlawful possession of a firearm.
But here's the thing. He wasn't.
Oh,
and it doesn't say that he had a buddy with him. So what I'm looking for is listeners who know more about the story. This happened in Alberta, as far as I know. Anybody in Alberta who knows more about the story, please send us an email. Let us know some more details on this, because I would be thrilled to hear that this is going to sound funny, but I would be thrilled to hear that somebody without a firearms license with a firearm out in the woods didn't get charged with unlawful possession of a firearm, because you know, that is common sense, and that is the way the gun laws are supposed to work. They're not supposed to be used to target law-abiding citizens. I know technically he's not, but they were designed to target violent criminals, violent offenders. They weren't designed to target non-violent.
I want to find out that this guy is allowed to have guns, but just never went through the paperwork. If this guy didn't have a license because he wasn't allowed to have a license, then yeah, throw the book at him.
Absolutely, but if it was just because he didn't want to, or you know, whatever. I want to know more of the story, and it was interesting to see the little bit that I did see, and it piqued my interest, so I wanted to share it, and I want listeners to tell me what happened. So I don't want to pay for a subscription to the newspaper to read the rest of it, because it's the Brandon Sun, of all places. I live in the other side of the country, so I don't need a subscription to the Brandon Sun. So anyway, somebody, please, let us know what's going on there.
Okay, now let's move on to our main topic. This week we're going to talk about bug-out bags. Well, that was the original topic, and now we're going to talk about bug-out bags / get-home bags.
And bug-in bags.
And
if you get bugs in your bags, you've got to get the bugs out of your bag. Because you don't want, like, cockroaches in your...
Yeah, that's enough. Okay.
See, I didn't even think it was going to go that way. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Carry on.
Shout out to Jay Hines. He bought a Mark 18. Sorry, am I not supposed to be checking Facebook?
Oh, you're hilarious, Trevor.
Is the main reason I'm not a vegetarian.
Okay, Carrie, no. Sorry. No.
So, whose idea was this for topic? Because it wasn't mine.
It was mine because I've been dragging my butt on my bug-out bag for a year now.
Oh, that's gross, man.
And I needed some motivation. Like, I bought... What did you say?
Nothing. Carry on.
Oh, jeez. I've been procrastinating completing my bug-out bag and looking for motivation here and there. Bought a book at World's End Warehouse. World's End Warehouse, by the way, is unfortunately closing down, and they are having ridiculous blowout sales. Mo bought one of those Stevens tactical shotguns with the pistol grip only for like 200 some bucks.
That's
he said
cool.
There was three of them. He almost bought all three of them. Guns are cheap, and all the prepping supply stuff is cheap. So if you're in New Brunswick, or check them out online, maybe they'll still ship. They're going out of business, and yeah, everything is blowout prices. So anyway, that being said, I bought a book there called Building the Perfect Bug-Out Bag, and I thought that would help me motivate me to get my bag finished, and I would start reading it at night, read three pages, fall asleep.
So it's very entertaining and exciting to read then.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm trying to keep motivated, trying to get this project finished. So I thought we should talk about it this week on the show, since last weekend when I was in Nova Scotia for the provincials, I actually picked up a couple items for the bug out bag, and got a couple of emergency blankets and some fire starter stuff, and got the bag out, emptied all of the stuff that was in it. That was I got a bunch of Canadian military surplus stuff, like webbing and different pouches that attach to the webbing and your backpack and stuff. And the bag itself is Canadian military issue surplus. So finally pulled it out from back where I keep my gun cases, took all the stuff out of it, and started to actually just randomly throw items into it. So I thought, what a great idea. Let's talk to the guys and see what they have for bug out bags. And then the topic of get home bags came up.
Yeah, I've got a get home bag. I don't have a bug out bag.
So why don't you tell us then, Matthew, explain the difference, and what's the difference between a get home bag and a bug out bag?
Sure. Well, a bug out bag is what you grab when you're leaving the house. If you need to get out of Dodge, you need to leave the town. If you live in the city and riots are erupting and civil unrest is beginning, and you need to go, to your cabin in the woods or to your parents-in-law or, wherever you're going to get away from it all, you grab your bug out bag and you've got what you need, to get to where you're going.
Generally, just to add to that, a bug out bag is generally 72 hours. From what I've read, it should be enough to keep you going for 72 hours until you get to, if you get delayed or what have you, you can't get to where you need to get to.
Yep.
You should have enough food and water and equipment to get you by for 72 hours.
There you go. So a get home bag is exactly the opposite. You're out and about and something happens and now you need to get home and you have what's with you. And so for me, I carry a get home bag in the truck, and it's more of a, I've crashed in the ditch in the middle of winter because I'm a poor driver kind of thing, and I need something to live off of for a couple of days while the rescue crew come and gets me kind of thing. It's sort of how mine is geared, but you can gear them all sorts of different ways. And a lot of people will have them set up in such a way that it's just equipment that you have with you in the car all the time that you can use to your advantage and in any way that you can use your imagination to get yourself home again. So that's sort of the idea between the two. One you have with you all the time, and the other one you have at the house all the time. So the contents can be very similar, but depending on where you are, depending on your local laws, they may or may not contain different items. For instance, Trevor's bug out bag could very well legally contain a locked, as per Canadian law, locked sidearm. Whereas my get home bag, I can't very well carry a firearm with me, a restricted firearm with me in my car everywhere I go. So I don't have a firearm with me in my get home bag.
And to clarify, I mean, if I ever have to grab this bag, I'm not worried about an ATT.
That's right. This isn't, I'm going camping for a weekend. No, this is my house is on fire and the riots have arrived and the zombies are here. So,
yep.
Owen, what insight do you have on this?
No, not much. You guys are doing a great job.
Oh, good. Do you have either a get home or a bug out bag?
I have a get home bag.
Okay.
I don't ever plan on bugging out.
Right. You live in a perfect location to bug in and stay in.
Yeah, I pretty much live in my bug out location, so
right.
I really wouldn't have anywhere to go.
Waco compound type thing. It's all going to end here.
Yeah, I don't know if I quite go that far, but
the Alamo,
let's say there's only three ways to my house. There's only three ways to my I will say this. There's only three ways to my house, and two of them cross bridges.
Are you including a helicopter?
No. That's another way.
Yep. There's four ways.
I mean by road. Hopefully the zombies are not coming by helicopter. But yeah, I have a get home bag. It's nothing really fancy, and there's still probably more stuff I should put in it. But it's got just pretty basic stuff. It doesn't have anything for tools in it yet. I'd like to get a multi-tool to throw in it, and maybe a multi-bit screwdriver or something like that. Just because you never know when you need something like that. I took a trip to St. Louis last year in the winter and had some truck problems on our way down and back. And fortunately, I had just on a whim before I left, I grabbed my Leatherman mutt, the mm-hmm. multi-tool, and threw that in. That was the only tool. It was three of us on the trip, and that was the only tool that we had with us to do all of our work.
It's a good thing you had it.
And it's a good thing we had it, or we would have been stuck. So good to have something with you, even if it's just to take a battery cable off or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, I carry some flares, some road flares, and I do carry about a liter of water in a canteen. And some water purification tablets. I also have what is this called? This is just trying to pull it out here to read the side of it for you guys. Because food is not the easiest thing to carry around.
No, because it'll go bad.
Because it goes bad, but I like to have a little bit of something. So I have some Daytrex emergency rations. And so this is... it's a little cube, probably 3 inches by 2 inches by 3 inches, but it's...
So it's not a cube then, is what you're saying.
Not quite a cube, yeah.
That's the dimensions of the cubes I learned in public school.
Well, it's the new math, you know.
Oh, right.
And I think this thing's good for 3 days or something for one person.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of...
Each of these little, there's little tiny... briquettes in there, and each one of them is a meal, basically. There's 2,000 calories in each one or some crazy thing like that.
That's cool.
So, it's easy, it's lightweight, it doesn't take up any space, and it lasts for years and years and years. So I just, that throws in there beside my water, so at least you have a little bit of, and it actually tastes pretty good. I have eaten it. I take it with me when I'm hunting. I carry it with me just to have a little bit of something for energy. And it's actually pretty tasty. Yeah. Another thing I think, most people would agree, those solar blankets, or they're a little reflective.
The Mylar bag.
Yeah, that's what I just bought for my Buggle bag.
Yeah, they're...
I bought two, see, so I could at least, because one is none.
Yep.
Right. I could put one in the Buggle bag and one in the get-home bag for now, right. And then put a second one in the Buggle bag later. Yeah, I always knew about them. But I saw a video, somebody's Facebook, about how to make this emergency lean-to shelter, and they started off by making a structure, kind of like a frame that was off of the ground, yep. And then they lined the inside of the lean-to with these Mylar emergency blankets to reflect mm-hmm. your body heat and keep it in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so I have two of them in here, and if I was going to be going on a trip with my family, I've got four or five more. Somewhere in the house here, I have to find them. And I just throw those. Actually, I think they're in my. They're cheap. So I bought
pick
a whole
them up
bunch
at Walmart for under $5.
Yeah, exactly. So I keep a couple in the bag at all times, and then if we were going on a trip, I'd grab the other ones out of my hiking backpack and throw them in. The other thing, of course, that I think is important to carry is a little bit of first aid stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot, but I do keep a few things because you never know. You come across the scene of an accident or you're just out and about somewhere. So I got Band-Aids and stuff like that. But I have some quick clot. And I have they're called Israeli bandages. And they're all vacuum packed and sealed. And so I've got a bunch of those. And I have, some rubber gloves.
It's actually a good idea to have is some rubber gloves. That's a great idea.
Because you're dealing with other people and don't know, so it's easy to whip them out of the bag. You're not really worried about being too sterile at that point. You're probably just trying to keep someone alive. So
yeah,
you know, slide them on, you're good to go. And, of course, batteries. So I got extra batteries for my flashlight and odds and ends like that. So
that's something else I just bought, too. I finally found a pocket-sized flashlight. Like, Matthew, you've got a nice one that fits on your belt and then it has a pouch. I've got one, but the pouch sucks. It would fall out all the time. So I wanted one for my pocket that wasn't huge but had a decent amount of lumens. It's a trade-off. I got a nice size one, but it doesn't really. It's only got like 23 lumens or something. But
I'll let you know what the model number it is. I don't know what it is. I got it on some Chinese website somewhere, but it's 130 or 120 lumens. It runs on a single AAA battery, and it is about as big as a AA battery. And I just drop it in my pocket. Two flashlights on me now.
Yeah, I definitely want to know more about that one.
Yep, it's really neat, really handy. It's about this. Brian Bolivar has one very similar to it.
Cool.
So Brian would know what I'm talking about probably more than even I do, because I bought it and stuck it in my pocket and forgot promptly what it was. It works really well. The fact that it runs on a AAA, batteries you get anywhere, just fantastic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's worth a lot. The other thing I do, of course, I have a couple ways to start fire.
Yeah.
Always in there. And what I did is I took a paintball pod. And they're not waterproof, but they, if you leave them submerged, but they are, you know, pretty
resistant.
Tight. Unless they're submerged in water, they'll keep the water out. And I just stuffed that full of all my fire making stuff. So I've got some steel wool in there and a 9-volt battery in a bag. And I guess I have matches in another.
Oh, in a bag. Pouch. That's good.
Shove
the 9-volt in there and then just put a bunch of steel wool in on top of it. That's
explain,
a great idea.
Explain what the steel wool is for, Alan.
Starting the fire, it's tinder. So if you use like a 9-volt battery and just rub it, and it'll actually light the steel wool, fine steel wool on fire.
You basically create a short on the 9-mil. And the
nine
electricity
volt.
Lights the steel wool on fire.
The 9-volt, not the 9-mil.
Oh, I'm thinking of that guy that had the 9-mil go off because of a battery in his suit in his briefcase. Right. Remember that?
Yes, I do remember that. And I remember I tried replicating that, and I didn't get it to work, but I clearly did it wrong.
I know
that can happen.
The other thing I do is because my bag is not very big, I got so much stuff jammed in here that I don't really have room for like a roll of duct tape. So what I've done is I took the pod, this paintball pod, and I started some duct, and I just wrapped the duct tape around and around it in one spot and built it all up. So I've got about 1/4 inch thick wrap of duct tape that I can peel off if I need it.
That's a good idea too. I don't have any tape in my kit. I should put some tape in there. That makes sense.
Yeah, I like to carry something. Good, but
I saw somebody building a lean-to frame using duct tape. It's perfect. So many different makeshift band-aids. You can
use it for all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Every Buggle bag should have duct tape.
You're right.
Or cable bag.
I got to get some.
My bag, of course. What do you guys have for bags?
Well,
I've got my book bag from high school.
And really, my get-home bag is going to be about the same. It's going to be, it's actually a Swiss Army brand, the same. Yeah. That it's my hunting bag right now is what I use, to carry in and out of the tree stand, which was kind of an emergency bag. It's got a small first aid kit. It's got a compass. It's got matches, stuff like that. I'm going to turn that in that bag and some of that kit into my get home bag. So that it'll be a backpack like Matthew's. My bug out bag though is a much larger Canadian issue backpack.
Yeah. I think for something where you're going to use it. I mean, you gotta understand what you're gonna be using your pack for. And like I said earlier, mine is a sort of a winter survival kit is what it's more of. It's less a get home and more of a I'm gonna survive the night because I have this as opposed to freeze to death. And so my backpack's not probably gonna leave my truck. So it doesn't really need to be top quality. It may or may not fall apart. But it's just holding all my stuff together in my truck. I do understand that, I might have to put it on my back and go hiking through the woods. And it would stand up to that. It wouldn't stand up to much more than that. But it would at least do that. But I think a good quality bag is a good idea. Something that you can put on, something you can carry around, and it'll you know, suffer the abuse that you give it while hiking through the woods or whatever.
And I think of a get-home bag is like, I need to get home. The wife can't come get me. Nobody can come get me. And so there's a situation that's arised that I can't
arisen.
Get home.
I believe the word is arisen.
Whatever.
It's not. It's not. I'm kidding.
I can't get home using the normal channels.
Right.
So it's got to have what I need to get home from possibly a fairly large distance.
Yeah.
I treat it like I said, I can't call a cab. I can't call my wife to come get me.
Yeah.
And I've got to, walk maybe a day or something. Who knows? So I kind of treat my get home bag like that. You know, you could be, or it could just be a riot's broken out in town and then the cell phones are down and I can't take my car. My car has been trashed or something. And
maybe it's not even you don't have access to your vehicle anymore. Maybe it's your get-home bag is just a container that you keep all of your stuff in that you might need when you're not at home. And it might not even be for any sort of apocalyptic sort of nightmare. It could just be you get a flat tire on the side of the road or you come across somebody. This has happened to me a couple of times. I come across people on the side of the road who've broken down in one way or another. And I've just happened to have a bit of wire or, a roll of duct tape or a screwdriver or a wrench or a knife or something to fix their problem for them and get them on their way. That's happened to me a couple of times. So just maybe it's just a collection of stuff that you can use while you're out there, not just be another sheep on the road with nothing in your car except for your coffee from Starbucks.
I'm thinking a little bit of food, a little bit of water, cash. Some cash stuffed in there, stashed in there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's actually one of the comments on Facebook. I actually posted a picture on Facebook and we've had a bunch of people comment, and cash was one of the things that I don't have in mind. That was from RJ, actually. He said money, small bills, and that's a great idea.
I've got an older handheld GPS and a compass.
Yeah, compass is a great idea. That was mentioned by Brian Bolivar, and maybe a topographical map of the area.
Yeah, the issue I have with that specifically is that's more of a bug-out bag thing. For a get-home bag, I probably know where I am, and I'm probably not going to be cutting across country. I mean, I guess I could be, but generally I'm going to have a
Right.
Yeah, yeah, if you want to avoid detection, you might have to.
But consider it this. A compass is only that big, right? It's not that big.
That is true.
Why not have one in there? And they're cheap. You can get them at Canadian Tire for like $10.
Yeah.
So, but a GPS is a great idea, Trevor, because GPSs are, so long as electricity is still flowing, GPSs are great. And people are like, "What do you mean your batteries are always good?" I'm thinking like an EMP strike and all the circuits are fried. That's the only thing that's really going to kill your GPS, because those satellites are way up in orbit. They're always going to be there no matter what happens down here, as long as you got batteries.
Yep. Yeah, that's how I'm going to build my get home bag to get me home in a natural disaster or some kind of collapse type situation. So,
yeah, it's a good idea.
I'll build it with that in mind.
Yep.
Yep.
And I mean, it's just like, and I like your bag, Matthew, because we drive in the winter a lot. Something can go wrong. You get caught in a storm, and you're that bag. And I will, change up your bag for the seasons, right? The clothing
absolutely.
My bug-out bag will be different in the winter than it is in the summer.
And mine should be, but I put it together, threw it in the truck last winter, and then left it. So
yeah, you built a stay alive on the side of the road in the wintertime bag.
Yeah. Yeah, I got snow.
Wrong with that.
I got snow pants. I got a balaclava. I've got a neck warmer. I've got two pairs of gloves. I got hot hands. I've got food. I've got lighter fluid. I've got knives, Gerbers. I got a slingshot with a whole bunch of ball bearings. I got a sleeping bag. So it's more of a survive the night in the truck for a couple of nights if you have to kind of thing, more of than a trek through the woods and get home that way. But I still could trek through the woods with it. I've got all the gear. I mean, I've got a big bolo knife, which Owen and I have discovered is almost as good as a hatchet. I've built shelters with it using that knife alone. So, I do have that sort of stuff too. It's just not geared that way. It's sort of multi-purpose, I guess.
Yeah, your bag is obviously a lot bigger than mine. Mine's pretty small.
Mine's a book bag, like what you'd wear in high school. Like it's a full-size backpack, and I've like I said, I got a lot of stuff in there.
This bag that I got, I've picked it up in Holton actually. And it carries, it just has like a one sling, one strap, and it it's the way it's attached onto the bag, it carries almost like a mail bag maybe or something like that.
Sounds like Moe's man purse.
Yeah. Something sort of like that. It's very comfortable to carry.
He takes it everywhere. Yeah. He's got a get home bag, emergency bag that he takes with him everywhere.
Yeah.
And this says, he carries that thing around like a woman carries a purse around. I swear to God.
This has Molly all over everywhere and a few Velcro spots, but it has, Molly on the bottom, on the sides, on the front of it. And then layers of pockets for different things of different sizes. And a little bit of padding on the back. It's, and then a big old hook on a couple spots. For a small little package, I was actually surprised at how much I was able to put in here. And this would not be uncomfortable to carry for a considerable length of time if you had to. Nice. So I'm actually considering getting another one to carry for a hunting bag. I do have a bag that I carry hunting, but this would be even better, I think, to have something like this. But it's not too big. It's not too heavy. Like, my daughter could carry this if I had to have my hands free and my wife had to
carry Matthew if she needed to.
Good point.
Funny.
So, yeah, a bigger bag certainly makes it easier to carry a lot of different stuff.
But if you have a small bag, it really forces you to be efficient with the space that you have.
And there's some things. I mean, if we're traveling in the wintertime, there's just stuff we throw in the car extra.
Yeah.
You know, we throw in extra because we got kids. So we throw in extra blankets and
that's right.
And all those sorts of things just for an emergency. The food thing is a big thing because I have kids. And we travel with kids.
Because they get whiny when they get hungry.
You're right. And
so do I.
Yeah, but I can slap you and shut you up. But
that's right. You're not supposed to do that with your kids.
When I slap my kids, they don't shut up.
Funny.
So to have, just something that they can snack on can make dealing with an emergency a lot easier.
Yep.
Yeah. And the only disadvantage of the way my bag is set up is that leave the car for any amount of time and that water I have in there is going to freeze solid.
Yeah, that's true. If it's in the winter, yeah.
If it's in the winter, and it won't be much good.
Yeah, some of the comments here on Facebook just wanted to rip through a couple of them for some of the suggestions they had. Paracord from Frederick. He said paracord would be a great thing to have.
I do have a little bit of that in some zip ties.
Yeah, zip ties would be another great idea. He said a good pair of boots or hiking shoes, which I had never even considered because I don't go anywhere in sandals, I guess. But that's
I was going
to
say, you and I are probably similar. We generally don't go out without boots or shoes on.
Yeah.
That's... I just got a new pair of Keens. The first pair of Keens I bought back in 2007, I bought at a Cabela's in Winnipeg, paid $180 for them, and they're still going strong. But I bought a pair on my way to Halifax. They were last year's model, and there was a clearance sale at some shop in the Miramichi, and I got them for $89.
I don't even know what Keens are, so...
Because you're way too cheap to ever buy them. That's why you wouldn't even consider them.
Are we talking about footwear still? Are these
shoes? Yeah, absolutely footwear. Instead of buying like a 5'11 boot, these, I was told, were... I was going to get a pair of 5'11 boots, and Sean Bevins, when he was here, he's like, don't do it. They make them in China now. They wear out, so... He said, stick with Keens.
Find so Keens are boots then?
Well, they can be. They're everything from sandals to shoes.
It's like a multi-purpose footwear?
Yeah, they're kind of badass. They're waterproof and, these are kind of like, they're like up the ankle a little bit. They're not low like a shoe. They're not totally high like a boot. They're kind of like a high-top sneaker.
Okay.
Waterproof, really aggressive thread.
Tread. Tread is the word you're looking for.
Sure. There. Tread pattern. Anyway, but Mo had a pair of Oakley boots that are similar to those 5'11 boots.
Yep.
And I wore them out when we were in Halifax, and I got to get me a pair of those.
Cool. All right. Other suggestions were headlamp. If you don't just have a flashlight, a headlamp is good. Clear safety glasses if you're traveling at night through the bush, because getting a branch stuck in your eye would suck. That's from Ashton. So thank you, Ashton. Brian Bolivar, we already covered his. He said compass, and he said some other non-show family-friendly ideas. So we'll leave those. Luke said fire starters, which we did talk about a little bit. Fire starters is a great idea. He said cotton balls and Vaseline, and that's a great way to to do that. Glow sticks. Somebody, RJ suggested glow sticks, which isn't a bad idea. Jeff Atkinson said a pre-planned location for your family to meet in case cell towers are down. I don't know how you're going to fit that into your bug out bag, but maybe a plan for it would work.
You're a jerk.
I really am. Yeah, we're, Jeff, things to put in our bag. Not if the bridge is out, where am I going to go? I'm just teasing you, man.
Jeff was brilliant.
Jeff is brilliant, and he has an ATC, which is really cool. And Luke suggested Life Straw, water filter, ration bars, and Mylar emergency sleeping bags. So, yeah, all good suggestions, guys, and thanks for writing in and sharing in the discussion with us.
Love the interactive Facebook stuff.
Yeah, we got to do this more often. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Cool. All right.
So... yeah, now we're moving on to whatever the next part of the show is, isn't it?
Listener feedback, I think, is next, yeah.
All right, moving on to some listener feedback. We've got a few emails this week. Matt, do you want to take the first one?
Do I ever? It's from Thomas. Thomas Donald.
Imagine that. We called him out and he answered the call.
He didn't answer my question, though, as you'll find out here in a minute.
Oh.
So, Thomas, you tried. I understand. Thank you for doing what you did. But I need more info, and I'll tell you about that when I'm done reading your email here. So
it's like the question on the exam said, "Tell me the causes of World War I," and you said, "Well, I can tell you what started World War II because I know more about that." That's
right.
What you did here.
That's basically what. Yeah. So
fail.
He says, "Here's a link showing some testing between some large primer versus small primer." In 45 ACP with a variety of powders and barrel lengths. I only used two powders reloading my 45s. Both Winchester 231 and Tight Group had similar but minor change of a 1+ inch in the point of impact on my targets using 1911 pistols with 5-inch barrels. See, Trevor, you didn't want this email just because you would have had to say 1911 pistols.
Vomit my mouth there, sorry.
The most dramatic change occurred when shooting my Smith & Wesson 6.25 5-inch barreled 45 ACP revolver. See, you would have liked that, yeah. Point of impact was 8 inches higher with identical loads when I switched rounds to... LP, so large primers, from the small primers. Muzzle flip and gases escaping from the BC gap, I know what that stands for, barrel cylinder gap, were noticeably increased. I would suggest not using any of the Winchester non-toxic SP cases if you are using soft Federal primers. The primer pocket seemed to be very small, and it takes a fair amount of force to seat the primer properly. I can always tell when one of those cases accidentally gets mixed in with my brass, and I fear it may detonate with the amount of force I need to apply. So he does tell us a little bit about the he's getting a difference in impact, so where the point of aim is, between a large primer and a small primer. So clearly there's a difference.
He must be getting a better burn with the large primer. What was the original question? What did we want to know?
What's the difference between... at least I think... what we wanted to know was the difference between like rifle primers and pistol primers and magnum primers. So why? Because in my mind, a spark is a spark. Once the gunpowder ignites, what the heck do we care what the primer does?
Well, the powder that's in the primer must be different. It must be a hotter burning primer for magnum and possibly for rifle.
But again, can you make something burn faster by putting a hotter flame to it? Like, it's like gasoline. If I have a jar of gas and I put a match in there or I put a blowtorch in there, it's still going to burn at the same rate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to understand why different there are
ignition
different types of primers.
Ignition.
Yeah, what's different in the ignition that changes things? And there's got to be an answer because they do it, unless, like we said last week, it's all marketing. So, I mean, that could be it too, but I don't know.
And like I said last week, I think it's just bench press primers that are an exercise in marketing. Man. Either way, I'm ashamed of myself for not knowing this.
I'm ashamed of Thomas for not answering my question in such a way that I was, and I'm ashamed at me for expecting him to do it.
Oh, and you're all right.
So, Thomas, no, thank you. That was interesting to read that you actually do get a point of impact change by using different primers, which which is weird. But at the same time, if it's a difference between a large primer and a small primer, of course there's also the difference in your case. So you're not actually ruling out the fact that it's just the primer. It could be the case being different too.
What's the only difference in
the case? Primer size, primer pocket size, right? Yeah. So the cases are actually different.
Well, the internal volume might of be the different. Case is, no.
It might be.
No.
Okay. How do you know?
Because I've loaded both of those before and handled them, and flash hole is the same.
Yeah, but it doesn't like it if Hornady
brass in the bottom.
Yeah, but if Hornady makes a specific type of brass, and then Winchester makes that same brass, aren't there going to be differences in like the thickness of the brass and the internal capacity and stuff? And they're all going to be they're not going to be 100% exactly identical between manufacturers, right?
Well, call it. So let's use the analogy of mil spec.
Right.
Right.
Oh, okay, it's, so they're gonna be within plus or minus tolerance. A certain tolerance. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I guess that might not be it then. But yeah, I still want to know why. Anyway.
Yeah.
good try. That's a swing and a miss. Try again. I'm kidding, Thomas. I'm kidding. You're the man. I'm not though.
Help
answer
us.
My question. Because I refuse to look it up because I'm lazy.
He gave us some information. And wanted us to, like, extrapolate our own answer from
not
it.
Not going to. No.
Like, read between the lines, guys.
Spoon feed, Thomas. Yeah. Spoon feed us.
Yeah. And spoon feed me slowly.
Oh, very slowly. And don't get it up my nose again. Ah. Here comes the airplane. Open the hangar. Oh, boy. That went off the rails quick. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's time for the next email.
Trevor, please.
Right. I never thought I'd actually, you know, like, be asking Trevor to hurry up and read an email, but
listen to Mr. Articulate Eloquency over here. Mark says the first thing. This is Mark Giroux from the Rescue Gun Club. The word "the" isn't even there. No one thinks me a bastard.
I love how you just mentioned that you're like the king of eloquence. This is great.
First thing, guys, great show. Well, it's Mark's French, so I have to read it with like a certain amount of accent or something.
Oh, I understand. This yeah. This does make a bit more sense now.
First thing, guys, great show and keep it up. Always look forward to this weekly podcast. I've been following you guys since CRR. I have a question about the Moncton shooting or a similar scenario. And Trevor, I want you to ask Officer Frank what charge or charges, if any, would one receive if a civilian would have shot the shooter. See what I did there? Don't want to say his name.
Good for you. Neither do we.
And then called the police to advise him as such. Because I know 99% of IPSC shooters said, I would have shot him. So, yeah, everybody's saying they would have shot him. But what, if anything, would in fact happen if a civilian had witnessed this guy walking up and down the street and decided to take him out? Especially, my take has always been that if you were going to shoot him, the only way you would have a chance to do it in self-defense would be A, if it happened outside of your home, and B, he murdered the cop. If you saw him pointing a rifle at an officer and you shot him from inside your home, I believe absolutely you would go to jail for at least manslaughter because there's way too many unanswered questions. The prosecutor would say things like, are you a police officer? Do you have training? Could you hear what was being said between the suspect and the officer? No. So for all you know, he could have been surrendering and you murdered the man.
Here's my take on that, Trev. I know that the Criminal Code of Canada does have a provision for self-defense and it's worded something along the lines of this. And I'm not obviously going to say it verbatim because I didn't look it up. But it's along the lines of lethal force or as much force as deemed necessary is authorized when your life or the life of someone else is in danger.
Yeah, but they would still argue that you could prove that the cop was in danger.
Well, except that pointing a firearm at another individual would a reasonable person should, and this is me being all common sense and logical, but a reasonable person should come to the conclusion that if you're pointing a gun at somebody else, that somebody else is in lethal danger.
Yeah. Now, this being Canada,
that may or may not be the case.
Yeah, I still think they would go after you and say that, you know, yes, he was pointing the gun at him, but you couldn't hear the cop. The cop could have been saying, put it down. You can't read the suspect's mind. The suspect may have been about to put it down, and if you had waited one more second, he would have put it down, but instead you popped him.
Right. So in that sense, I think you're probably right. It's probably not the best thing to do to shoot somebody if they're doing that.
But it's so dependent. I mean,
yes, absolutely.
If you're looking out the door, and you see the guy step out from behind a tree and actually shoot someone, well, there's no negotiation here. There's no discussion. He just shot someone.
That's my next point, Owen. Where I think where you would have a legal defense would be, he's outside your home and you witnessed him murder somebody. Okay, so he's got the means.
Yeah.
He's got the intent. He just committed a heinous crime, and he can also come into your house for cover. You now need to protect your family. He murdered somebody right outside your doorway, and you could be next. He could turn and decide he's going to take cover in your home. Now you're defending.
For me personally, I mean, I can only speak for myself because I know my level of training and how I would react, or as close as I can imagine I would react in the situation. I don't think at that point I would still even shoot the person. There would have to be some sort of verbal, not confrontation, but there would be, some sort of, hey, stop, right. Put down the gun,
yeah.
Because he shot that person, I'm going to shoot him. No, it means if I can quote unquote citizens arrest that person, that's going to be my primary goal. Same as it is with cops. Cops don't go around and go, this guy's got a gun and he just shot someone, we're just going to shoot him. No, they still try to make an arrest.
But see, Owen, that you don't have the same, especially in the United States, what a cop is required to do and what an armed citizen is required to do are two different things. A cop is required to try and do that, but not a citizen. If you're a citizen in the U.S. and you're carrying a firearm, you're not obligated to come to somebody else's aid, but you're covered if you do, if it's a clean, legal shoot. An armed citizen would not have, in the United States, would not have had to say, hey, you dropped the gun. The gun is out. He just shot somebody. You could legally drop him. So,
yep.
He asked me to talk to Officer Frank, and I did. Officer Frank is incredibly busy with the carbine training for the officers. They've really sped up the training of the troops since this tragedy back in June. So I sent him a text, and basically he said that he has an answer, but it would be too long to put in an email, and he doesn't have time to do it right now in an email. So he says, I'll have to do it on the show. So first chance we get, we will have Officer Frank on the show, and we will pose this question to him and hear what he says. And I imagine it's going to be a lot of politically correct, and he doesn't want to get himself in trouble, because you imagine he's going to come on our show and tell all of our listeners,
go ahead and shoot him.
Right. Yeah.
he pretty much can't do that. But what he can do is give us a hypothetical situation, and then he can give us a hypothetical response.
Yeah, we hope. Yeah.
Something along those lines, that's the best we can hope for. Yeah. So, we'll get him on as soon as we can. So, Trevor, you're on that, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, cool. There you go, Mark. He's got an answer, but we're going to get him on the show to answer it.
So, we took all that time to get an answer, but then not give it to you. It's kind of like we're playing Mark or Thomas Donnelly with you. Is basically what we're doing. we're going to get an answer. It's just it's not yet, and it's not in the way you want it. So
there you go. All right.
This last one comes from Edith, who says, "Great show as always. I do have a question for Trevor.
I have a question for Edith. When are you getting your citizenship?" Edith is Styx's fiance, or better half, or something. I think fiance, and she's not a citizen yet, and it's only because she's just a slacker. So there you go. We need some peer pressure on Edith so she can become a citizen.
There you go.
She's as great.
Don't peer pressure her, guys.
No, you do it. You're going to go and get in trouble. Not us.
I'm the one.
We're smart.
German.
I'm not touching this. She says, "I do have a question for Trevor. If the law in Canada would change and you could open carry a gun for self-protection, but only a 22 caliber, would you give up your man card?"
And let me put a little caveat. If you could carry at all, open carry or concealed carry. I think she put open carry because I open carry in Utah. Yeah, shut up. If you could open or conceal carry.
Still Edith to shut up?
No, I was talking to you.
Oh, okay.
I would never tell Edith to shut up. She is the nicest lady that I've never spoken to. Yeah. I really should speak with her sometime. I never have. Edith, you and I, we've got to get together. No, that's awkward. Let's carry on. So, Trevor.
First thing Styx is going to do when he meets you is punch you right in your throat.
Probably. And I'll enjoy it and say, I deserve that. Thank you. May I have another.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So if you could carry, but it was only 22, what would you do, Trev? Would you give up your man card?
Nope.
Nope? I'm not carrying no stinking 22.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, of course. Do I have to give up my man card?
She asked, would you?
Oh, no, but the first question is, does he have a man card?
Well, that's, yeah.
I got a stack of man cards. Bitch, right. I give out the man cards.
And they're all expired, I should mention, and revoked.
I have the revoked man card stack as well. Filthy made me like the chief of handing out the man cards and revoking the man cards. So you all want to be quiet. Now.
Well, maybe you should give me one first.
I think you haven't even earned it yet. I think it goes without saying that if my only option to carry was a 22, then I would move to Utah.
Let's just say that this law is in effect worldwide.
If the only thing I could carry was a 22, well, yeah. But everybody, if it's in effect worldwide, everybody loses their man card. So we start over at zero. So my answer is yes.
I'd like to respond to this by saying I don't think you'd have to lose your man card. I see nothing wrong with 22 caliber, but that's me. I remember Trevor saying something about he doesn't want to give up his man card because of 22. So I think that's just you, Trev.
I would give up the man card if it meant I could carry.
Yeah.
Now,
that's funny.
22 caliber doesn't say anything about Magnum.
That's right. And you know what? I was listening to something recently. I can't remember what. I think it was Sticks and Armed Squirrels Project, episode 22 with Ken Kowalski. They were talking about 22, and one of them mentioned something about 22 Magnum. I think I got the right show anyway. And 22 Magnum has the same quote-unquote knockdown power as 380.
Special.
38 special?
No,
I thought it was
380.
Yeah.
380, yeah.
And a lot of people consider the 380 to be the bottom end of acceptable caliber. So if it's an acceptable caliber, you know, 22 Magnum, yes, it's smaller, but like we discussed last week, the technological advances we've come along with you know, expanding projectiles and whatnot, it pretty much, it's right up there. Mm-hmm. So I would have no problem carrying a 22 Magnum for self-defense.
Yep. And
Hornady makes some pretty nice 22 Magnum loads.
They do.
And yep. I would carry the Kel-Tec PMR-30.
Yeah, I know. So with you there. What a great gun. 30 rounds in the mag.
I would carry a Kel-Tec PMR-30, 30 rounds of 22 mag. Man card saved. A bad.
Oh, that's funny.
All right, so we are moving on to iTunes.
I didn't check it. You checked?
Nobody checked.
Nobody
so
checked.
We are moving on again. Shoutouts.
Oh, yeah, I got lots.
Yeah.
To Terry Poole, this gentleman and a scholar and a crippled cop right now. Get well soon, Terry. Some drunk schmuck fell into Terry's leg and busted up his knee good.
Ouch.
Terry's an awesome guy. We went out to visit him when we were in Nova Scotia for the Nova Scotia Provincials. And first thing he did was put a glass of Lagavulin in my hand. And he's a prepper, Mo. Yeah, a lot of cool prepping stuff. He's got – I'm not going to get into what he's got, but he's prepared.
Good.
Yeah. Robert Bracton. Robert Bracton handed me my second NFA challenge coin at the Nova Scotia Provincials. And I was kind of shocked that I had gotten it. I think he said it was from Sheldon and thanking me for the article that I wrote. So that was really cool.
That is cool.
I informed him I already had a challenge coin from Sean Bevins. He said, well, now you have two.
There you go.
So that was awesome. Robert's a really nice guy. And an Ipsic shooter too, Beretta, but I'm not going to hold that against him.
I would.
And Brian Bolivar. Brian.
Wait. You're giving Brian a shout out?
You know, yes, I am, and he deserves it. Brian's a good guy, and he's the laughing stock of podcasts on both sides of the border.
That's not his fault, though.
It's not his fault. He brought it onto himself.
That's
and he
right.
Deserves
it's definitely
it, but it's
his,
not
fault.
His fault.
Yeah.
No, Brian pointed something out very important in one of the stages that I had designed for the three gun. It's the tank stage, which was Wolverine at this year's
Wolverines.
You start off sitting in a chair with your wrists crossed behind your back like you're tied tied up in the chair and being interrogated, and the pistol's on the table, and there's a couple of guards there. So the stage, the timer goes, you grab your pistol, you shoot the two guards, you holster your pistol, run up to the first APC, pull the handle, retrieve your rifle, shoot targets on the right, draw, dump the rifle, go to the next, on the left, go to the APC on the right, pull the handle, take out your shotgun, run to the end, shoot some steel, which two steel poppers activate falling walls. When the walls drop, there are IPSC paper targets back there. Dump your shotgun, redraw your pistol, engage the paper. So Brian called me up and he said, it sounds cool, Trevor, but why would you reholster a perfectly good firearm? How is it practical? You got, and you never reholster, IPSC guys never reholster as part of anything we're required to do. We're never required to reholster, so we don't train to reholster.
Right.
So we've got different levels of experience there, and you get some new shooters kind of nervous. Reholstering could be a little, could be, it certainly increases the probability or the potential for an accident, reholstering a loaded firearm. There's that whole aspect of it, which I considered before, but the part that convinced me was when he said, how practical is it?
Well, here's the thing, though. If you're in a firefight and you've got your sidearm and then you fight your way to your rifle, wouldn't you then put down your sidearm and pick up your rifle?
We'd put it down, but would you bother holstering it?
I would.
Yes.
I would
absolutely.
I wouldn't leave it behind.
Yeah.
So there's that. He's got a good point, though, about, I mean, that's one thing.
You're going to use that firearm until it's empty. You're not going to take the time to holster a gun that's perfectly functioning and full of bullets to trade off to the carbine. You're going to empty the pistol until there's no rounds left. Then you're going to go to your carbine. I mean,
don't
why
tell me
you
what
not
to do.
No,
I might
no,
not.
No, 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 no.
If I had
no,
the option,
if you're
I'd
taking fire, you would stop shooting your pistol with bullets in it and then go to your rifle?
No, not if I was taking fire.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Like, depends exactly.
But if
the situation.
If I was behind cover and if I'm getting a rifle out of a tank, clearly they've stopped shooting at me. I hope.
Yeah.
Guys, stop shooting at me. I'm getting my rifle out of the tank.
Well, the idea
if I have any chance at all to upgrade my firepower, I'm taking it. But I'm not going to give up my what I have now just to do that upgrade. I'm going to keep every available weapon.
Yeah, because what's the first thing we do in a movie? Well, we start screaming at the screen when Buddy leaves a perfectly good gun behind.
Yeah,
exactly.
An empty gun. Like,
yeah.
Oh, take it with you, you putz. The idea in the stage was that you need to transition to the rifle because you're engaging targets that are further away.
That's right. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Either way, the point I think that's the takeaway here is that it's probably not the safest thing to do for people who haven't practiced it, so it's probably better to not do it that way.
But, well, I got to tell you, Brian articulated it a lot better than I did because the points that convinced me to redesign the stage so that you didn't have to reholster the pistol weren't the safety concerns.
All right, then. Maybe you just didn't ask Owen and I instead.
Apparently not.
Yeah. Should have asked us as well.
Brian needs to come on and defend his point of view then.
All right. That's fine.
Is Brian coming to the three gun? To the multi gun?
Not invited.
He's not invited.
So who really cares?
Who cares what he thinks then? If he's not coming, he doesn't get a say.
He's not going to get accidentally shot. Like I didn't.
I got to tell you guys, as mass director, I don't think I've ever spoken to Brian where he had such clarity and focus. I really
well, so that's good.
Do you think he was drinking or not drinking?
Oh, definitely drinking. It was Monday. No, it was Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. So I'm sure he was into the sauce by that time.
Had to have been.
Yeah. Okay. Other shout outs. Oh, John Floven for the Huffington Post story. Thank you. We just didn't have time to get it in this week. And we certainly would have jumped on it more had it been a Canadian twist. But basically it was this. A police officer wrote an article that said, yeah, if you don't want to get shot, beaten, tased, let us trample your rights.
That's basically what it came down to, yeah.
Swallow your pride, put your dignity in your pocket, and stand back and be compliant for just a couple of minutes while we trample on your rights.
Yeah, and here's the thing. He's right.
Who?
The cop is right in the sense that if the cops are adamant on trampling your rights, the only way to not get shot or tased or pepper sprayed, like he said, is to comply. That may or may not be the correct course of action because you should never have your rights trampled. But if you don't want to get shot, tased, or pepper sprayed, just comply and then follow up with a civil suit later. However,
that's right. In reality, the only place your rights are upheld are in a court of law. Your rights are trampled every day, everywhere.
Yeah.
Schools, municipal governments, provincial governments, police officers, your rights are only enforced and protected when you do so in a court of law. Otherwise, you get your rights trampled on all the time. And telling the cop you're violating my rights is not going to make him suddenly have a moment of clarity and go, you're right, sir, I'm sorry.
No, he's just going to smash you in the face and carry on.
You're going to comply or you're going to get beaten.
The better course of action here would be, of course, for police officers to recognize that we do have rights and to, you know, protect us as opposed to, you know, trample all over us.
It's so much easier when the sheep don't have rights.
It is easier that way, isn't it?
Show us your papers.
Yeah.
Cool. That's it for my shoutouts.
I don't really have anything other than to all the people at the Black Badge, especially a lady who took it called her name Joanne. She did very well. She handled her gun like a pro. She handled her equipment
better than most of the guys,
maybe all the guys on the range.
She had like that comfort level where she wasn't.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She was the fastest draw out of everyone who took the Black Badge. I'd say that gun came out on target. Mag changes, really impressive. A lot of confidence. She struggled with some of them. She was really nervous. So she struggled a little bit, but generally not bad. I mean, I know she can shoot better, but yeah, she did all right. Small hands. I've never met anyone with hands that small.
What's she running for a gun?
What was it, Matthew? It was Walther
P99.
Yeah.
So it was a really small grip, but it still wasn't small enough for her. She needed a smaller grip.
You know what might actually fit her hand? The Grand Power.
Oh,
the
maybe.
Smallest grip on the Grand Power is just
tiny.
Petite.
Yeah. So that was she struggled with some with different grips. Like we were trying to show her some different grips, and you know she pretty much had to stick with what she had to stick with because just was her hand size. But anyway, I just want to give her a shout out for sticking through the day and shot the match and everything. Yeah, so she did very well.
Ooh, way to go,
and to everyone else in the course that shot as well. But it's a good crew.
And good for you guys for putting on a class. First time that you guys put on a class that I wasn't able to help.
Yeah, no, it went well. I'm not going to say it was better because you weren't there, but
but it's implied. I understand. It's fine.
All right.
This won't be the last class you put on without me then.
No, probably not. So be sure to join both of our National Firearms Associations, CSSA and the NFA. Check us out on Gun Owners of Canada forums and like us on Facebook. Also check out all the other great shows on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network. I'm sorry. I can't. Anyway, and the Crusader podcast next. See, if you hadn't said anything, nobody even noticed. Do you think people actually listen to this part of the show? I'm pretty sure at shoutouts they tune out.
I'm tuned out. I don't even listen to this part of the show, and I'm here.
Both
and
of those
listen for it now just to see if you're going to get it wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
Or Reno.
So.
It only has one name, and you can't get it right.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening.
So long, farewell.
Adieu and Vedasane.
Beatles saying goodbye.
take someone shooting. Take Ron Burgundy shooting.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over,
it's time to get a gun. Whenever you're ready, Owen. Unless, Trevor, you need to say something else. Shh, it's Owen's turn.
Okay. So funny, because you guys are just waiting, right? Like, he's way too quiet for too long. He's going to get a dig in. I know he does, right? So we're just going to let him do it, because you had like 3 minutes to start.
Yeah. Okay, now let's move on.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I almost swore at you right there, but I knew Matthew would have to edit it, so.
I'm editing all this out anyway, because this is between show, or between topics.
Oh, well, I ain't starting again.
You've got to.